Architecture Talks, the podcast about architecture from Jung.
The Scandinavian countries are a model for us in many ways, from business to education. Copenhagen, Helsinki, Oslo, and Stockholm regularly rank in the top 10 in the statistics on quality of life and best work-life balance. We find a design culture anchored in society where the size of the objects does not really matter. Regardless of whether it is a public space, a building, a piece of furniture, or a luminaire, there is a discussion about context, appearance, and also usability. The Scandinavians obviously have a different kind of recipe for perceiving their environment, but also for designing it. In today's podcast episode, we talk about where that actually comes from with our guest Julian Weyer from CF Möller, and are very excited to learn more about their ingredients. We are Katrina and Nicole from Jung.
Yeah, hello. Julian, you were born in Berlin, you live in Denmark since a long time, and you are partner of CF Möller since 2007. But you also worked there for over 25 years. So the studio has around 300 employees by now. And the head office is in Aarhus, Denmark, with branches in Copenhagen, Aalborg, Oslo, Stockholm, Malmö, London, and recently also in Berlin. Hello and welcome to our Jung Architecture Talks podcast. Nice to have you with us, Julian.
Thank you so much, and thanks for the invitation.
Julian, as a first question, we would like to talk about the Scandinavians involving design. So many people actually envy the Scandinavians for actively involving design and architecture into the social debate. Where does that awareness on the subject come from?
I think it comes from sort of the co-development of the Scandinavian architecture and design culture together with the modern welfare societies which were developed in the Scandinavian states over roughly the last 150 years or so, or beginning at least at that time. Then, of course, after the First World War, there was rapid development of the social democratic societies which built comprehensive welfare states, social states, which were about engineering and designing the life of inhabitants in many ways. And because of that, there is a tie between the political culture and the actual culture of design. And these have gone hand in hand. So there's really a strong tradition in the Scandinavian countries for regarding architecture and design as tools of innovation in the welfare societies and kind of social innovation. So I think the understanding of that and the tradition that comes out of that is one of the reasons why it's so firmly anchored in societies. It's really a part of the general identity of the Nordic countries.
So you would actually describe it as a kind of tradition more than only an awareness?
I would say so, yes, yes. I mean, the awareness is quite widespread. And of course, you can tell that whenever you travel in Scandinavian countries, it's quite visible that this tradition is there. And it's also alive, of course. But it's an awareness that is bred through this understanding of the cohesion between those quite different areas, actually. And it's also something which is an awareness within architects and designers. And I'm very strongly aware of that because I have this dual identity. So I do actually come from a different culture, but I was literally raised into this Danish design culture. And as a result of that, I can sort of take a step back and look at it from the outside, but I'm also very much a part of it myself. And I realize how different it is actually to what you might find in other countries, even though there might be superficial similarities. Northern European countries in many ways kind of have similarities, of course, when you perceive them internationally. But when you look closer, there are actually also some quite interesting differences. And this whole idea of what design and architecture mean as a tool in society is one of the areas that I've found to be very, very different. And I've worked with this in many countries throughout Northern Europe, including Germany and the UK. And so I've really felt these differences too.
You're the lucky one who can hop in between the cultures.
Yes, it's actually quite useful also because it allows me to question, of course, sort of what we come from. Because, I mean, Danes can also be very annoying, let's face it. Because you can confuse the culture that you're from with the rest of the world. And it's also good to actually have an understanding of where that ends and where the differences come into play. And we can tend to be a little bit condescending maybe because we feel so strongly that we have invented this. And so you have to scale it back. Yeah, proud too, yes. But you have to take it back a notch and enter the conversation and also understand where the people are coming from.
Yeah. Do you have both citizenships, actually?
I'm not actually right now, but I'm applying for that.
You're working on it.
Yeah. It's only recently actually been possible to achieve a dual citizenship. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And do you think does the availability of material and possibilities of mass production plays a role as a counter model to an elitist design claim of an intellectual upper class?
Well, that's the interesting thing. When you talk about design culture as elitist, that is a view which is not really true or applicable for the Scandinavian countries per se. And one of the things which is extremely striking if you come to people's homes in Denmark, I mean, to a level which is quite extreme, you will find what is elsewhere perceived as elitist design pieces in literally every home in Denmark. To see your Anne Jacobsen chairs or your Paul Henningsen lamps, you don't actually have to go to a penthouse apartment in Copenhagen. You can go to a farmhouse in West Jutland and you'll find literally the same culture embedded there. There's a very strong element of homogeneity and almost equality in that, which are some quite big values in the Danish society. So that's also a driver. But really what it shows is that what is elsewhere perceived as highly elitist is quite the vernacular in Denmark. And I think that's an extremely interesting thing. So our perception of what everyday is what other people would see as avant-garde.
I always enjoy looking at house windows or into house windows a lot more than the shopping windows, actually.
Indeed, yeah.
It's just so wonderful and detailed. Yeah.
Yes.
Do you think that the interdisciplinary education and focus on architecture and design studies is the reason for this different way of thinking?
You can't say per se that it's the reason, because it's a relatively new thing to have that kind of focus on co-educating that. It's something that has come to the foreground in the latter years because there's been, you might say, quite a revival of the importance of this design culture with the whole sustainability agenda. So, of course, you had the golden age of 50s Danish design, which in a way is both a fantastic legacy, but it's also a bit of a burden for any aspiring designer in Denmark, because you'll always be measured against that. But what happened with the sustainability agenda, which has really come to the forefront, is that it kind of reinvented a lot of these themes, and at the same time, it introduced new elements. So there's a lot of innovation been going into that. So I think the Danish design and architecture sector has seen sort of a second golden age in the opportunity to engage with new problems on a global scale. And together with that came this focus on actually taking a step earlier in and saying, well, actually, this is something that we already have to discuss at primary school level. You really have to already start thinking about both sort of your place in the world, but also how you can design or how you can change this world. And again, with the Danish thinking, that means that design plays a crucial role. So that's how these things come together. So design and architecture as part of that bigger agenda become something that become embedded in primary schools and middle schools in Denmark. But this wasn't always like that. So this whole culture evolved without a specific sort of, you might say, curriculum in schools pointing to that.
It starts a lot sooner. It's not that the education is different, but it just starts sooner.
Yeah, it starts sooner because you're exposed to it. I think that's the key point, is that exposure. It's everywhere. And therefore, in some ways, you become indifferent to it, because this is, like I say, you'll find your designer furniture everywhere. But on the other hand, it becomes part of your identity, who you are, how you've grown up. So you are also sensitive to that. And I think that's where you'll find the big differences in the Nordic societies, is that, again, it's not so much an elitist choice as it is actually something which is really, really widely embedded.
So the education system is not really different to what we know in Germany, or?
Oh, well, of course, there are lots of differences. And I've also had the opportunity to go to school in a number of different countries. So I have a quite first-hand experience of these differences. No, of course, the Danish education system is vastly different. But that's, again, because it's looking for models to democratize. And what you might say is look at different pedagogical models and actually try to find new ways there. And again, this has fostered a lot of innovation, both in terms of pedagogics, but also in terms of architecture, to respond to that. And I mean, this is happening in every country right now, but you definitely find that the Danish school system has been quite pioneering in some of those things, bearing in mind that actually a lot of the ideas which have been incorporated stem from elsewhere. German schools from the 60s and 70s, UK experiments in the 70s, New Zealand at the same time. So we've kind of been cherry-picking ideas and concepts from all over the world, but putting it together in the Scandinavian fashion and trying to create an education which is really focused on the individual. I think that's one of the key points that the Scandinavian countries have been innovative about, is it's really looking at the individual more than at education as a mass thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we can actually eliminate the prejudice that the education is actually different, but only the site is educated different because they started out sooner and detailed, yes. More detailed.
Certainly, that's something that plays a role, yes.
Nice.
Yeah. So in our preliminary conversation, we talked about the fact that architectural criticism in Denmark is largely based on the fact that a scheme has not been implemented radically enough. Does this mean that the strategy per se is to do everything differently than rather just fulfilling expectations?
Well, I mean, the self-understanding of Danish architecture is that there's room to experiment and there's room to innovate. Of course, this is not always true if you look at every single building that's made in Denmark. There are lots of buildings which are pretty repetitive and some of them are also pretty unimaginary. So it's not like Shangri-La where everything that happened here has that particular magic. But what you do see is that there are a number of designs which have actually been able to transcend borders. And the reason that this is even possible is because there is a real interest in looking where can we go. And again, this interest has to do with the fact that we perceive architecture not just as a luxury or not just as some aesthetics, but actually it's something that will help us tune our society for the better and for the future. And in that context, this kind of innovation becomes something that everybody is interested in. So it's not just for the few or for the client. This is actually about the whole society. So in a way, this kind of innovation and at least innovative thinking behind the architecture really becomes a duty, everybody's duty to try and implement that. And I think that's one of the places where you'll find a different attitude in the Scandinavian countries. And that makes it possible every once in a while to make something which really pushes the bar or really changes the mix or in some way innovates. And that's why I mentioned this, the idea of what is the criticism of architecture measured against. And it's measured against, is this project actually moving us? Are we getting somewhere? So it's not really just, does this look good, right? It's not just about the facades, or it's really about where are we going with this? Is this contributing to society? Is this actually changing society for the better? And that's a pretty high bar to live up to. So of course, not every project will be able to do that, but the aspiration has to be there. And that's an interesting thing because it pushes us all.
Does this bar also work outside of Scandinavia?
Well, you can take it with you. I mean, that's one of the things that we've been trying to do when we go into different markets, is we say, well, we don't go into, say, the UK or Germany with the intent to be another British architect or another German architect. We actually try to come there and push that bar. And of course, there'll be resistance because we can't just sort of transplant Danish architecture. You have to work with the given circumstances, of course, the site, but also the whole political context, whatever. But really, the idea is to say, well, we can always try. So we can bring our ideals and then we can negotiate and we can test and we can experiment and we can see where we are going. And it's been very interesting for us to find that, for instance, now that we start working more and more in Germany, the reason that we're getting jobs now is because we actually offer something which is different, because we deliberately come in and say, well, we are not going to do the same thing that you were expecting. We're going to show you something different, which comes out of our Scandinavian ways of thinking. So we really use that as a tool.
Do you have an example, what you are like working on right now, or a project example?
Well, there's a great project in Berlin right now, which we're working on, which is a bank headquarter, a competition that we won by trying to think about sort of what is the modern day workplace look like and how do we combine that with the indoor and the outdoor thing. That's something that we're particularly passionate about, is this combination of green and architecture and indoor and outdoor. There's another big project coming up in Berlin, which hasn't really been publicized yet, but it's quite an important project for us and for the city. And it doesn't look like what you would normally expect. And so again, that's an interesting example. And we're doing a number of projects in different sectors, like, for instance, healthcare, which is one of the sectors where you can really tell what the impact of architecture has to do in a societal level. It's an extremely important topic with healthcare. And we're working with projects in Germany who are also pushing the bar in terms of how do we design healthcare projects. Not because we can challenge the way the healthcare sector operates in Germany. No, but that's a different story. We, of course, have to abide by their mode of operation. But we can actually enhance the quality and we can enhance the experience of both the staff and the patients by adding the element of green and the integration with landscape and a really strong focus on daylight, which is something that we're obsessed with in the Nordic countries. As you may have noticed, and we see that as both an architectural quality, but in the end it also becomes a tool, for instance, in securing future flexibility and usability of our buildings.
What kind of issues are there if you try to communicate your point of view? Is it the way of communication with the different kind of, you know, people you are working with in projects, or what issues are your experience?
It's different for every single project, really. I mean, if you do competitions, typically your project will have to speak for itself. So your idea will have to be quite clear, but you need to communicate it in such a way that it really makes sense to other people looking at it and not just yourself. And I think that's one of the big challenges. I think we are in a fairly good position in the way that in the Scandinavian countries, we are forever competing against really, really good colleagues here. I mean, you all know the big names from Scandinavia, and we're competing for every single job in Denmark, in Sweden, in Norway. So in that way, that keeps us sharp. So we are quite attuned to how to work with that. But it's clear when once you then go outside of your little Scandinavian bubble and you start to communicate to people in other countries, you also have to consider their viewpoint. So it doesn't always work if you sort of just bring on your usual. You have to sort of try and understand where they come from and then be able to meet their demands and address their concerns as well. I mean, a lot of people come to Denmark and Scandinavia and look at projects and say, well, this is great, but it would never work at home. And you have to address that concern. Of course, why wouldn't it work? Well, maybe actually you're right. Maybe we only have to change a little bit and then it could work. But it probably couldn't work if you just transplanted the same building.
Yeah, and probably you have to work with a lot of different ways of communication. Not only language is the thing you can work with, it's also the visualizations.
Yeah, absolutely.
And et cetera.
And also where you place the emphasis. I mean, one of the things that we've tried to emphasize is how these buildings contribute to the daily life and how could we actually make a literally more pleasant environments for instance, employees or patients or whatever we're dealing with, or school children. I mean, they're trying to focus on where do we contribute something there and what has this changed? And again, we see that tradition is different in all different countries. So some places you find an extreme focus on aesthetics. And the way we would communicate would be much less about the aesthetics and much more about what does it do.
Exactly.
In some cases, that can be a fantastic, but you have to get into the right context. And one of the things that I've noticed is that some countries are also reaching a point where they're ready for something new. And I think this is the case for Germany now. I mean, Germany has long had an architectural tradition, which was very formal. And yeah. I think we have reached a point. Yes, and I'm being very diplomatic when I say formal. but emphasizing that actually that right now there is the window and opportunity for something new. I mean, we certainly felt that when we turned our focus more to Germany, is that we realized that there is a really strong interest in something else, something that we could bring to the table, and others. There are many other Danish architects working in Germany at the moment. And I really feel that this time it's not just like such a phase. I think this is because there is an understanding now that these traditional models have kind of reached as far as they can go, and there's a need to test something different. And that is, of course, where you typically can, that's very interesting, but it, very often your view will change or your gaze will go to Scandinavia, because it seems that we have been open to experimenting with these questions a little earlier than so many others. No, I cannot even say, I mean, I've tried to see how they relate to society and why is this happening here, but I can't really say why we should have done that earlier than everybody else. It's not that we're that much. It's not that we're smarter or anything. It's that for some reason, a lot of these experiments have already been made here. And therefore, it's always extremely interesting to look to Scandinavia and find that inspiration. And of course, for people like us, that's that's fantastic. So we become the benchmark of how to do things.
Yeah, and even starting so soon, thinking about things, you even say you should have started earlier. So
of course,
that's a challenge. Does that in Germany also, like, is it maybe related to the change of generations?
I would very much think so, yes. I think there is a massive change underway. I mean, and this coming generation is influenced by so many things. I mean, it's obvious to say that, yes, the internet obviously influenced the generation. But with the internet also came language skills and a lot of other things, which are opening up possibilities which just really weren't there before. And that is one, I mean, you can say that that's always been a real difference between Germany and Denmark in that way for many years, is that Denmark has always had that understanding that it was impossible to enclose yourself into Denmark because it's too small, it's too small a language area, it's too small a mercantile area. You have to look outward. So for Danes, there's never been any question that you have to look outward and you have to be able to communicate with the world. And of course, for larger countries like Germany or France or UK, for a longer time, it's been possible. I mean, I wouldn't say the UK is inward looking, but it's possible for countries like that to sort of be more introvert. And I think what we're seeing now is a generation which is also changing that. And I think that's super important because with that, you take a lot of steps really fast, actually.
Yeah. So let's come back to the topic design.
Yes. So,
a common expression is that design is a matter of taste.
Mm-hmm.
As it can be experienced individually, this makes it kind of useless as a guideline for decisions. But the architect Mikaela Holmes-Samse says design competence can be learned and we urgently need it for all levels of decisions. So what do you think about that?
Well, I think what's probably happening there is that two different interpretations of the term design. And like I said, one is about form and appearance, and the other is about effect. And that's the other part, this part which is part of the whole society, are talking about design as a tool. I think that's the one that she's referring to as well. I mean, if you look at the biggest design prize in the Nordics, which is held in Denmark every year, the Index Awards, it's very, very telling that the Index Award is not given to products based on how they look. In no way. It's only to do with their performance, their effect, their impact on the world. So there, the idea of the term of design here is an effect and a usefulness and something which has this impact on society and even wider global impact, if possible. We really have to strive for that as well. And that's often confused with this other side of design, which is styling, essentially. So making things look in a particular way. And what happens in the golden age of the 50s in Denmark is that you somehow managed to converge these two into an era where products that look really, really good at the same time also hit home with being exactly sort of what was needed at that moment. And that's what we're forever looking to do again. Right now, we're definitely focused on the importance of the usefulness of the product is way beyond just their mere aesthetics. But what you really want to go for is to find that point where the two converge and where it makes sense and it looks good, that becomes a very convincing argument.
But learning the Danish way of thinking is hard for someone who didn't grow up there, or that's kind of difficult, right? So, I mean, you're saying that the Danish have to look out, but to look inside, it's more complicated, I think.
Absolutely. I think there are plenty of books published in Denmark about what a strange little country this is, how weird it is to live in Denmark as a foreigner. So yes, in a way, we're sort of an interesting study object for the world because Danes are different in many ways. A lot of the laws of nature that would apply elsewhere in the world do not apply in Denmark so much. For instance, there's this whole taxation issue. It's like we pay dramatically high taxes, but it's literally a very small minority who seriously want to get rid of that. So the majority are actually happy with this system because it also gives them something back. It gives them quality, it gives them tranquility, security, etc. There are a lot of areas where they feel that this is actually a working model, and it just doesn't work that way elsewhere. So other countries want to be Denmark, couldn't actually
get
there.
Yeah, because they're so happy.
Yeah, but it wouldn't work. That's where you really need this whole cultural package because it doesn't work just to implement one part of it. And so in that way, you can say, yes, it's very hard to understand the Danes. It's hard to become a Dane, etc. But on the other hand, I think when you look at what's going on in Denmark, it's not really that complicated. Of course, the culture is quite specific, but when you look at why is it working, why is it attractive, why does it produce attractive architecture or interesting designs, so it's actually quite transparent what's going on. So this is not a black box which just pumps out styles and designs. This is actually an open discussion about where do we want to go as a society, how do we reach our goals, and how do we weaponize, that would be the wrong word, but how do we employ all these possibilities that we have whenever we invest in our society. And that's why you find even things like infrastructure, or I mean, right down to we've designed energy infrastructure in Denmark. The discussion about how do we want our energy infrastructure to look? I mean, we will be living with this, so how do we want it to look? And these are the kinds of discussions that you don't find in many other countries, but that's because we realize that every time we invest in our society, there's the opportunity to also change it a little bit to the better. And this is this perception of design, which is really strong here. And that's the idea of bringing the design on the curriculum of primary and middle schools, is also to strengthen that awareness, not about sort of building the perfect home.
Yeah. You mentioned that there are some books existing in Denmark about Danish design and the way of thinking. And also a new book will be published by C.F. Müller in October this year.
That's right. Yes. Yes.
And the title is Welfare Architecture for All. What is it about, Julian?
Well, it's really about these connections and these ties that we're talking about. It's a book which looks at both our work, but also tries to put it into a bigger context, trying to look at sort of why do we do the things we do. So again, great with...
Does it give an answer?
Yes, we're trying to actually, yes. We're trying to talk about sort of what are the drivers behind the work that we do and the design that we do. And this is both, I mean, because it might have an interest somewhere else, because the Danish model is of interest right now, and that there is a window for that, but it's also because we think this is an important discussion, because we realize that we come from a place that is a little bit special in that respect. Of course, we're not just a Danish studio anymore. We are really a Scandinavian studio, which have roots in Denmark, but since we are now very strongly represented in Sweden, in Norway, we're working in Finland, and UK, Germany, etc. We realize that we are Nordic, pan-Scandinavian Nordic studio, and we see that these issues are the same but a little bit different everywhere, and the discussion is a little bit different everywhere. So we're also looking at this, very interesting to try and look at how this Danish legacy has been able to influence neighboring countries. And so for us, it's a way of trying to look at our projects and put them into that context, that we are really seeing ourselves as part of the innovators of society. And this is not something which is uniquely for us. I would say pretty much all Danish architects would sign off to that. We really have a strong, maybe sometimes we exaggerate our importance. I will accept that, that criticism.
That is very polite exaggeration.
Yes, but I will say that there's quite a risk of that. But we really feel strongly about what we are doing, because we have that belief that we can change things.
Yeah.
So, Julian, if you had 1 year off, what would you prefer to work on?
Oh, that's an extremely difficult question. You know, it's like the worst client who will come to you and say, well, there's unlimited funds and you can choose what you would want to do. Normally, we see ourselves as solving problems. So actually, a job without a problem is actually the hardest job at all to work with. Because, of course, if you want to make this kind of sense, you need something to play ball against, something that will push back and make you find your ways. So what would I do with unlimited time? Well, or not unlimited, but a good deal of time to work with. Well, I think one of the things we could do is we could try and look at a specific problem which we repeatedly see sort of being overlooked or being down prioritized in the processes, and say, well, maybe we need to spend some time on working on that out of the context of, say, a bigger project or something, and then try and see if we can push the agenda just a little bit on one of those things which doesn't always really get related. And now I know what your next question will be. So what
can you
might
give it a
that,
name?
What might that problem be? I don't actually I'm not actually thinking of anything specific there. I'm just thinking that we quite often we see a repetition, a pattern in that some of the things we want to implement actually get to work, while others maybe not. And that would probably be where it would be interesting to delve down and say, rather than doing more of the same, is try and look at what's actually the hindrance for that. But a specific example, that's quite a different problem, actually. I have to think about that. Maybe we'll get back to it at some point.
And in that year, if you could choose to have lunch with anyone you like to, who would that be?
Well, I think we would definitely be talking about looking outside the world of architecture, because I think one of the key important elements for us is that we get input. And maybe that's actually one of the problems which I think we have, is that it's hard for us to get the right input. I mean, of course, if we have a client for a specific job, we can engage with the client, we can engage with users, maybe. All that is fantastically important and great, and it's an integral part of any project. But wider input, really research, I think that's one of the areas where there's still an untapped potential. We are all working with it in some degree or other, but it's just not enough at this point, I would say. There's so much more that needs to be done, because there are areas which are unexplored and there are areas which are maybe misunderstood. We've seen an extreme advancement in the implementation of sustainability measures, in sustainability systems and assessment systems and all that. It's been really fast-paced and it's still moving. We're still picking up speed as we move forward. But I feel that there are still areas that are overlooked there. And I think what we need to be looking at in this case would actually be to try and go into some of the specific areas of material science, I think, could be quite interesting. But also the social sciences, I think, in terms of sort of the idea of where this impact is going. So I would say I would want to have lunch with people who have a deep insight into an area which is touching upon what we do, but it's not a part of what we do. I think can't tell you a specific name, but I would need that sabbatical year to find them, probably.
That's nice. But that sounds like a really good plan. So if you have a year off, you could find a really nice thing to do. And well, we really, really enjoyed the recording with you, and greetings to Berlin. It was a great pleasure talking and listening to you, Julian.
And we like to say many thanks to our listeners as well. If there are any topics or speakers you are especially interested in, then please let us know and write us an email at architects@jung.de. And we heartily invite you to the upcoming Jung Architecture Talks podcast. Look them up on jung.de/architects and tune in.